so cold that we won't be able to tell which way is up. Let's give Danielle a chance. She's supposed to do this. If she wasn't, she wouldn't be the only one who could hear whatever she was talking about. Or maybe she's losing her mind, Chris said, looking worriedly at the spot where she'd jumped. No one can stay underwater for this long.
Chris is right, Blake said through gritted teeth,
the tension in his jaw visible as he spoke.
We have to help her. I'm going in after her.
He took off his shoes and threw his coat to the ground, diving into the ocean before any of us could say no. I stared at the spot where he'd disappeared. A sinking feeling passed through my stomach, growing worse when he didn't resurface. Now was the time to create a brilliant plan to save them both, but I froze, unable to think of anything. Too much time was passing. Danielle might be able to stay under for this long, but Blake couldn't. He could be dying, and I was powerless to help him.
Should we still do nothing? Chris asked, his voice shaking. Since it's working so well?
The water stirred, and Danielle's head popped out of the surface. Her hair matted in place, mascara dripping down her cheeks. There was an arm wrapped around her shoulders. Blake's. He floated next to her, unconscious. She treaded water, the muscles in her face strained from holding on to him, but she managed to keep his head above the surface. Which one of you idiots let him jump in after me? She yelled. I met her death glare with one of my own. None of us let him, I said, my throat tightening at the sight of Blake floating next to her. He jumped before we could stop him. She reached the dock and eased his arm from her shoulders, and Chris hurried to the edge to lift him up. Blake's body thumped as it hit the wood. His eyes were closed, his lips a sickly shade of blue, and his face was so chalky that he looked like a mix between an ancient statue and a corpse. If he was dead, I wasn't sure if my healing powers extended that far. Just the thought made my chest hollow, and I clenched my fists so tightly that my nails dug into my palms. He had to be okay. I ran over to him and held my hand to his cheek, unaware of the tears streaming down my face until they landed on his pale skin. Then I felt a faint glow of life coming from his body. He was alive, so there had to be something I could do. This was nothing like fixing a cut, but I grabbed his hand anyway, determined to heal him. Instead of closing my eyes, I kept them open, focusing on his pale face as I pulled white energy out of the air. Warmth rushed through my veins, energy pulsing through my body as the center of our palms opened to each other, and I pushed the energy I'd gathered towards him. Just when I felt like I wouldn't be able to pull out any more energy from the universe, his eyes snapped open, and he leaned to the side to cough the water out of his lungs. My head felt fuzzy, like I was about to pass out myself, but that didn't matter right now. All that mattered was that Blake was okay. Danielle rushed over to him and wrapped her arms around him, shoving me to the side. My elbow collided with the dock, a sharp pain shooting up my arm. I rubbed it, glaring at her. I'd just saved Blake's life. She could at least pretend to be grateful.
What happened?
He asked, his voice hoarse. You jumped into the ocean to try saving me and nearly drowned, she said, laughing and crying at the same time. As if I needed saving. Water's my element. I sat up and healed my elbow, stopping the throbbing that would surely turn into a bruise in the next few hours. Then I looked over at Danielle. She had been dripping wet a second ago, but now she and her clothes were completely dry. She was more powerful than I'd realized. She took Blake's hand, the same hand I'd held while saving his life, and all of the water soaking his clothes glided off him, forming a puddle on the dock and slithering back to the ocean.
Thanks,
he said, running his hands through his now dry hair. Of course. She reached for his hand, and while he didn't grab it back, he didn't drop it either. He just let it sit in hers.
Did you find what you were looking for?
He asked her.
I almost got it before you jumped in after me, she said, laughing now that it was clear he was going to be fine. Now I have to go back in and get it.
It was tempting to say something about how at least he'd cared enough to try helping her, but I kept my mouth shut. Kate frowned and looked at Danielle.
What exactly was it that you were looking for? She asked.
Some sort of jar,
Danielle replied. It looked tied down, or attached to a stone, but I'm going to try getting it anyway.
It can't hurt to try, Chris agreed.
Then he looked at Blake and said,
And don't go playing Superman again, or I guess Aquaman would make more sense.
Don't worry, Blake smirked. I'll leave that to Danielle. I've had enough of swimming in the freezing cold ocean for the day.
All right, Danielle said. Here goes nothing. She spun on her heel and dove back in, not creating a splash this time.
It was like she'd become part of the water. Figuring it would be at least a minute until she returned, I checked to see how Blake was doing. His face and lips had returned to a healthy color. Another rush of relief passed through my body, and I realized that if he hadn't helped me practice using my powers last night, he could be dead right now. My throat tightened at the thought, and I swallowed to make the lump go away. I'm glad you're okay, I said, stepping towards him.
Thanks to you, he said. I don't know what you did, but...
He paused, his eyes full of concern.
It didn't drain too much of your energy, right?
I'll be fine, I said. Although I suspected that if I had to do whatever I'd done for a bit longer, it might have become a problem. I'll just take it easy for the next hour or so. The probability of that happening was slim to none, but no one said anything otherwise.
Just don't go fighting any monsters,
he said with a wink. I stood still, not knowing how to respond. Kate and Chris still didn't know about the two-headed hound from last night. That must have sounded completely strange to them. Kate shuffled her feet and looked back and forth between the two of us.
Right, she said, her forehead scrunched. No monster fighting. I'll keep that in mind.
Danielle resurfaced before I could respond, and she lifted a large object into the air.
I got it, she exclaimed.
I squinted, trying to make out what she was holding. It looked like a jar with two handles. The deep orange background reminded me of red clay before it's put into the kiln, and brown images decorated the sides. I was too far away to make out what they were. She swam to the dock and placed the jar down. Then she hoisted herself up, the wooden planks creaking under her weight. She was already completely dry. The jar was dry as well. Kate knelt in front of the jar and reached forward to touch it, but she pulled her hand back at the last second, as if afraid of damaging it.
This is beautiful, she said. Look at the details in the paintings.
I knelt down next to her to get a better look. While the paintings on the jar were tiny, they held more detail than I ever could have imagined. The largest section featured a bearded man in an elegant chariot pulled by a horse, his hair blowing in the wind, a surge of water coming up behind him. His eyes looked fiercely outward, and he held a trident in his hand. Packs of horses galloped around the chariot, and a winged horse in the sky looked down on him. He had to be Poseidon, the god of the sea.
It's like Pandora's jar, Kate whispered, still fixated on the paintings.
Jar? I sat back on my heels and looked at her. I thought Pandora had a box.
There was a mistranslation from Greek to Latin, she explained. It was actually a jar.
And this is the jar from the myth?
I tilted my head in disbelief. That sounded pretty far-fetched.
No.
She shook her head.
Not the same jar. Although Pandora's jar was created by Hephaestus, the god of fire, blacksmiths, and artisans. Maybe he created this one too.
Maybe, I said, although I doubted it. Greek gods didn't just come down to Earth and drop handmade jars into the ocean. Actually, from what Darius said in class the other day, the gods rarely came down to Earth at all. Danielle scooted closer and held her hands above the jar. I'm going to open it, she announced, looking at each of us for confirmation. No one said anything. We all knew she was going to open it whether we agreed or not, and she wrapped her fingers around the handle, easing it upward like she was afraid it might break. I braced myself for something crazy to happen, an explosion, a flash of light, a sonic boom. But the jar remained the same. Danielle leaned forward to see what was inside, her hair draping in front of her face.
There's a piece of paper in there, she said,
lowering her hand into the jar. Something shuffled inside, and she brought out a piece of rolled-up parchment.
It reminded me of the one Darius had showed me of the original prophecy. However, unlike the prophecy which was yellowed with curled edges, this parchment was as good as new. It was also completely dry. It's immune to the elements. Kate's mouth formed into a small circle. She leaned forward, tucking her hair behind her ears as she examined the paper. The jar had to have been crafted by Hephaestus. Almost every magical finely made object is. Danielle unrolled the paper and examined it. What does it say? Kate asked. Travel north to the King of the Sky, she began, her voice rising as she continued. He stands among the stones of the dead, accessible to the one who can fly high. She lowered the parchment and looked at each of us, like she was waiting for one of us to tell her what it meant.
Fly north to the sky?
Chris looked up at the sun and used his hand as a visor, squinting in the direct light.
Anyone got a private plane? Or a rocket?
Kate laughed, but she sounded more on edge than anything else. I don't think that's what it means, especially considering that when this was written 300 years ago, people had no way to get up there.
But it's a prophecy.
Chris elongated the last word.
Sure, they didn't have planes yet, but they could prophesize their existence.
Danielle played with the paper, looking back and forth between Chris and Kate. The prophecy got us what we needed by driving east, so now we should head north, she said, glancing back at the car in the parking lot. Thinking back over the ride to the ocean, an idea popped into my mind. The Stones of the Dead, I repeated, surprised I hadn't realized it immediately. The cemetery. We passed it on the way here. Of course. Kate snapped her fingers. The statue of Zeus, the King of the Sky. There's a statue of Zeus in the cemetery? I asked. That was the most random thing I'd heard all day.
Right in the back of it, Blake said. It's taller than a house. We always figured our ancestors put it there to remind us where we came from. Urban legend says it's haunted, so middle schoolers like to sneak out to the cemetery at night to see if anything happens.
And does it? I asked.
No,
he laughed.
That's why it's called an urban legend.
Right, I said. Urban legends, fiction. Greek mythology, fact. I would have to remember that.
Then what's so important about the statue?
You've heard of the Seven Wonders of the World, right? Kate asked, standing up and stretching her arms behind her back. Like the Great Wall of China and the Taj Mahal? Those are the Seven Wonders of the Medieval World, she explained. Same idea, but it's based off the Seven Wonders of the Ancient World. So, I paused to recall the old monuments I'd learned about in school. The Pyramid of Giza? Kate nodded, a small smile forming on her lips. That's the only one still in existence today, she said. One of the other ancient wonders is the statue of Zeus at Olympia. There's a replica right here in the Kinsley Cemetery. Art history professors come here all the time to check it out. But the Parthenon in Nashville attracts more tourists because it's way more famous.
There's a Parthenon in Nashville? I asked.
She nodded again. Because of all the higher education institutions there. Nashville's called the Athens of the South, she said, making quote signs with her hands. The city built it in the late 1800s, but the statue of Zeus here is where the idea of recreating ruined monuments in the States came from. It was built 10 years before Nashville's Parthenon. Danielle clanked the lid back on the jar and picked it up.
Enough with the history lesson, she said, hugging the jar to her chest. The statue is super close, and it's the best thing we have to go on. So let's check it out.
Chapter 26. Zeus towered over the mausoleums, rivaling the height of the nearby birch trees. He sat on top of a podium that was about 7 feet tall. Carved mythological scenes decorated the sides of his throne, and his left hand held a scepter with an eagle on top. His right hand balanced what looked like an angel in his palm. His shoulder-length hair and long beard resembled the image of Poseidon on the jar, but while the sea god's hair blew loosely in the wind, Zeus's was symmetrical, not a strand out of place. His eyes stared forward, powerful and determined. That's incredible, I said, my lips parted in awe. Even though Kate must have seen the statue before, her eyes were wide as she took it in. It really is, she said. It's an exact reproduction of the original. It's made of ivory. The throne is wood with gold-painted carvings, and Zeus' hair, beard, and clothing are all made of gold. I never get bored of looking at it. I didn't bother to ask how she knew all of that. Knowing Kate, she'd researched it eons ago and still remembered every detail. You see the goddess that Zeus is holding? She asked, pointing to the figure in his right hand. The goddess was what I'd originally thought was an angel. Tiny compared to Zeus, she stood proudly in his palm, her wings wide open behind her. She held one hand up in the air, pointing forward like she was preparing for battle. I nodded for Kate to continue. That's the goddess, Nike, she explained. The goddess of victory that Darius told you about during your first day of class. Now do you see how her wings look like the swoosh? I walked around to look at the goddess from the side. Sort of, I said. But I wouldn't have noticed unless someone had pointed it out. You guys can study the statue all you want another day, Danielle said. But we're looking for something here. And we should try to figure out what it is. Maybe it's another jar. What did the clue say again? Chris asked, scanning the statue up and down. Danielle didn't unroll the paper, instead reciting the clue from memory. Travel north to the King of the Sky. He stands amongst the stones of the dead, accessible to the one who can fly high. It's not a jar this time, Chris said. It's the eagle, the one at the top of Zeus's scepter.
How did you know that? Kate asked.
Danielle said the jar was calling to her.
He looked at Danielle, and she nodded in affirmation.
Well, the eagle is glowing, like it has an aura. It's faint, but it's definitely there.
I craned my neck up to look at the eagle at the top of Zeus's scepter. It wasn't glowing, but then again, I hadn't heard when the jar called to Danielle either. Kate studied the statue, her lips pursed.
How do you propose we get up there? She said.
Chris smiled mischievously and wiggled his eyebrows.
Are you up for some fun? He asked her.
It depends on how you define fun, she said. Because if you're implying that we climb the statue, then I'm going to have to say no. I want to get through this day alive, and falling to my death from 60 feet in the air doesn't seem like an effective way to do that.
I wasn't implying that we climb.
He laughed and flipped his hair out of his eyes.
I'll swirl you up in the air like I did with the paper yesterday, and you can grab the eagle. It'll be easy.
He flicked his fingers around in a circle, blowing some leaves off the ground to demonstrate.
Swirl me in the air? Kate's mouth dropped open. I would rather climb.
Come on, he pleaded. We need to get up there somehow, and it'll be fun.
She crossed her arms and shook her head.
Why are you asking me? She said. Can't someone else do it?
I'll do it, I offered, cursing myself a second later for volunteering. I hated heights.
No, Blake cut in. You need to rest after using all that energy at the ocean. We need you at full strength in case you need to heal someone again, and you won't be able to do that if you're dead.
He paused, his eyes softening as he realized how harsh that sounded.
If you can die, which isn't something we should experiment with right now, or ever.
Right. I turned away from him to look back at Chris, glad that I wouldn't have to fly up there. I guess that leaves Blake, Kate, or Danielle.
Fine. Kate huffed and held up a hand. I'll do it. I weigh the least, so it makes sense.
Awesome.
Chris beamed, rubbing his hands together.
You ready?
As I'll ever be.
She sounded less than enthused.
When I get up there, I'm just supposed to grab the eagle. What if it doesn't come off?
The jar was practically part of a rock, Danielle jumped in. But I could pull it right out.
Yeah.
Chris pointed his thumb in Danielle's direction.
What she said.
Great.
Kate forced a smile and looked up at the towering statue.
I can do this. I'm ready.
It sounded like she was trying to convince herself more than us.
All right.
Chris pointed to the ground near Zeus.
Stand here. Kate looked at me with bulging eyes, and I smiled in encouragement before she headed over to the spot. If Chris dropped her, at least I would be able to heal her. Well, if the fall didn't kill her on impact. I didn't know if my power extended to bringing people back from the dead. If it did, I shivered at the thought. That wasn't something I wanted to have to find out.
Here it goes.
Chris narrowed his eyes in concentration as he looked at Kate. He lifted his hand and held it out toward her, his palm facing forward. But he didn't create a mini tornado like with the paper at Blake's house yesterday. Instead, the air pushed against the bottom of Kate's feet, lifting her up like a hot air balloon. She gave little kicks with her legs as she rose.
That's good, she said, her voice shaky. Not too fast.
I half expected Chris to shoot her 10 feet in the air just to be snarky. But he listened, letting her float upward until she arrived at the top of the statue. She reached forward and secured her arms around the eagle. It looked about the same size as the jar Danielle had brought up from the ocean, but standing 60 feet below, I couldn't be sure. Kate gave it a tug, but it stayed in place.
It's too heavy, she screamed. There's no way I can lift it.
Try harder,
Chris yelled back up at her.
The eagle's what we need. I know it.
She lost her grip after the third yank, her arms flailing back to her sides.
It won't work.
She looked down at us and shrugged.
This is impossible.
Chris scrunched his eyebrows.
Are you sure?
Kate gave the eagle another unsuccessful tug.
Yes.
She placed her hands on her hips, which looked funny while she was floating in the air.
Can you please let me down now?
Fine.
He lowered his hands, his brows furrowed as he controlled the air holding Kate up. She floated to the ground and landed as lightly as a feather. She jogged towards us, pushing her hair behind her ears.
Sorry, she apologized to Chris. I tried. I just wasn't strong enough. That thing wasn't budging.
I don't understand what went wrong,
he said, studying the eagle perched on the top of Zeus's scepter.
I know that's the key to whatever comes next.
You should try getting it, Danielle suggested, pointing at Chris.
Maybe it's not working for Kate, because it's your clue to uncover. My jar came out just fine. You mean the object only comes loose for the person it's meant for?
Chris scratched his head.
Like there's some sort of spell on it?
It's just an idea, she said. You should try to fly yourself up there. Worst comes to worst. It doesn't work.
Or I fall and crack my head open, he muttered.
Kate jerked her head to look at him, her mouth open in a circle of disbelief.
You lifted me up there with no problem, she said. Why do you think you can't do the same for yourself?
It just seems impossible.
He glanced at the statue again, doubt crossing over his eyes.
But I'll try.
Kate's lips curved into a small smile.
Good.
If you fall, you always have Nicole to fix you up, Danielle said with a snicker.
Exactly. I ignored Danielle's attitude and smiled at Chris. You'll be fine. You're stronger than you think, and I can heal you if you need it.
All right.
He walked to the statue to stand below the scepter, took a deep breath, and closed his eyes.
It's not working, he said.
But then he opened his fists so his palms pointed towards his feet, and he started to rise, faster than Kate had when he'd lifted her. The wind blew his hair in all directions. When he reached the halfway point, he soared upward until he was level with the eagle.
Look at that, he shouted, lifting his arms in the air and pointing his toes toward the ground. I'm Superman.
He did look like he was flying, except it was more like he was standing on a puff of air, his legs wobbling as he tried to stay balanced. He wrapped his hands around the eagle just like Kate had and lifted it off the scepter. He didn't have to strain at all. He laughed and looked down at Kate.
You had trouble doing that, he said, raising the eagle over his head like a trophy. I must be stronger than I thought.
Or Danielle was right, and the eagle would only come off for you, Kate muttered, rolling her eyes.
I couldn't help but laugh. Chris floated down to the ground and ran toward us.
I got it, he said again, his arms wrapped around the eagle.
What do we do with it now? I asked. He lowered it to the ground, the muscles in his arms tightening as he placed it down. The eagle was the same height as the jar. It nearly reached my knee. Its wings spread out like it was about to take flight. Each feather was meticulously carved to the point where they could have been real, and its eyes were hard and determined, like Zeus's. Chris kneeled down to study it, craning his head to look at it from different angles.
"There's a line right here," he said, pointing to a thin crack that formed a complete circle around the eagle's neck. "Maybe its head is a lid, like Danielle's jar."
He reached forward to lift it off, but Danielle shoved her hand in front of his, stopping him.
"Let Kate try," she said,
her eyes hard as she looked at Chris. He kept his hand poised above the eagle.
"Why?" he asked.
"Because then we'll see if only you can open it, just like only you could lift it off the statue." She enunciated each word, like Chris was too stupid to understand.
"If Kate can't get it open, or any of us for that matter, then we know that the only person who can open each object is whoever is supposed to."
While I didn't want to say it out loud, Danielle did have a good point. The four of us took turns attempting to get the head off the eagle, each with no success. I saw the line that looked like a lid, but it might as well have been welded shut. That thing was not budging.
"Now it's your turn."
Danielle motioned for Chris to try. He rubbed his hands together.
"I've got the magic touch,"
he said, kneeling down and wrapping his fingers around the eagle's head. It popped right off. He reached inside and pulled out a rolled piece of parchment the same size as the one Danielle had found in her jar. "What does it say?" I asked, resisting the urge to grab it out of his hands so I could read it myself. He unrolled the paper and held it in front of him.
"Follow the direction of victory, as she will lead to the fuel that burns the fire. That which causes destruction can also be used for creation."
He shrugged and looked back up.
"That's all I've got, and victory is capitalized."
"The direction of victory," I said, looking up at the goddess in Zeus's hand. "It could mean Nike. Didn't Sophie say that Nike meant victory?" Danielle stood up and wiped some dirt off her jeans.
"It's just another vague clue," she muttered. "This would be easier if they could give us a map."
"The fuel that burns the fire,"
Blake repeated, looking at Nike.
"She's pointing to the woods."
I faced the direction of Nike's finger. "That's northwest," I said. I had no idea how I knew that, but I knew I was right.
"Those are the woods near Darius's house, right?" Kate asked. "The ones we stood next to on the night of the comet?"
"Clinton Woods,"
Chris said, rolling the paper back up.
"I live a few houses down from Darius. I used to play in those woods when I was younger."
He placed the paper back in the eagle and shut the lid.
"Let's go check this out."
Chapter 27. We drove on Odessa Road until reaching the woods. Once there, Kate parked in Chris's driveway. The trees here were taller than the ones in Georgia, and they had more branches. In the winter, they looked like skeletons. But I imagine they must be pretty in the summer with all of their leaves.
"Where to now?"
Danielle asked Blake.
"Do you hear something calling to you?"
"Or see something glowing?"
Chris added.
"No,"
Blake said, looking out into the woods.
"Why don't we walk around and see what we can find?"
"There are a few trails around here."
Chris walked towards the woods and motioned for us to follow.
"They shouldn't be too far. Some friends and I used to go to this abandoned cottage to play around in before my parents found out what we were doing. It had burned down a long time ago, and they said it wasn't safe. They were afraid we would get hurt."
"A cottage that burned down?" I repeated, surprised he hadn't mentioned it earlier. "We should check it out. It works with the whole fire destruction thing in the clue."
"The trail should be right around here."
Chris stopped at a small break in the trees. It looked like an animal path, barely wide enough for an average-sized person. I probably wouldn't have noticed it unless Chris had pointed it out. There was just enough room to walk if you ducked under the occasional branch and watched out for tree roots. I glanced at Danielle to see her reaction to hiking in her stilettos. She had a look of disgust plastered on her face, which amused me. She would jump into a freezing cold ocean, but was horrified at the idea of walking through the woods. I didn't think I would ever understand her. Kate glided past us,
pushing through a group of branches and walking underneath them.
Come on, she teased. The trees aren't going to hurt you.
Chris and Blake followed her, leaving Danielle and me standing at the opening.
After you, I said, motioning for her to go ahead.
She jogged to catch up with the others, stumbling over a tree root in the process. I followed as close behind as possible, managing to accumulate a fair share of scratches on my hands from the branches. I contemplated saving my energy and not healing the small cuts, but they stung, so I fixed them anyway. Using a tiny bit of energy wouldn't make too much of a difference. If anything, it was practice.
Here it is,
Chris said from up ahead. I followed Danielle, who was stumbling in her stilettos, and we caught up with the group. We were standing in a small clearing, most of it taken up by the remnants of the deteriorating cottage. It looked like it only had two rooms before it had burned down. The charred wooden planks making up the floor had warped into themselves, and the log walls barely existed anymore. Mounds of stones made up what appeared to have been a fireplace. Nature was reclaiming most of the cottage. Moss grew everywhere, and trees were sprouting up on the inside. I could see why Chris's parents didn't want him playing there as a child. The place was just asking for someone to get hurt. Blake looked at the house, his jaw tense.
Does it feel warmer here than in the rest of the woods?
He asked, studying the center of the warped floor. A cold breeze passed through the air, the tree branches whistling in the wind.
I wish, I said, pulling the sleeves of my jacket over my hands.
He walked towards the cottage and stepped over what was left of the wall, his eyes intense as he focused on that same spot in the center of the floor.
Are you sure that's safe to walk on?
Danielle asked.
Blake glanced at her over his shoulder and laughed.
Says the girl who jumped in the ocean when it's below freezing outside.
Fair point,
she mumbled, taking a step back. The wood creaked beneath Blake's feet, and he was careful not to step on any parts that looked like they were about to cave in. Once at the center, he knelt down and pressed his hand against a plank that looked relatively intact compared to the others surrounding it. Kate looked at me and tilted her head. I shrugged, having no more of an idea what Blake was doing than anyone else.
Want to tell us what's going on?
Danielle yelled, stepping forward and placing her hands on her hips. He didn't reply, so she jogged towards the ruined cottage and stepped over the edge. She took a few steps, but her stiletto got stuck between the boards and she tumbled to the ground, catching herself with the palms of her hands. Apparently, she wasn't as graceful on land as she was in the water. She brushed the dirt off her palms and huffed, not making an effort to stand back up. Blake looked over at her and smirked.
You know how you didn't need me to jump in the ocean after you?
He asked, continuing before she could respond.
Well, you don't have to help me here. I've got this covered.
He turned back around and took out his lighter, flicking it to life. He transferred the flames so they hovered in an orb over his head. Just as he had on the playground, he controlled the fire perfectly, lowering it to the floorboards. The burning wood smelled like a campfire, crisp in the brisk winter air. I wanted to get closer to warm my hands, but Blake had made it clear that he needed to do this on his own. Plus, the floor didn't look stable. I didn't want to fall like Danielle, who had rejoined us and was still brushing the dirt off her jeans. Blake lifted one of the charred floorboards and removed something from under it. His back faced me, so I couldn't see what he'd found. Finally, he turned around, holding an iron box. It was smaller than the jar and the eagle. It looked about the size of a toolbox. He maneuvered his way out of the remnants of the cottage and dropped the box on the ground near our feet. Dirt poofed up from under it. The box must have been heavier than it looked.
The clue must be inside.
Kate reached for the lid, but it wouldn't open for her.
You try, she told Blake.
When Blake tried, the lid lifted without a fight. He reached inside and pulled out two items, a leather book and another, smaller box that was also metal. Danielle kneeled down next to the box.
Where's the clue?
She asked. He opened the box, his eyebrows knitting together as he glanced through whatever was in it.
Well?
She prompted.
There's no clue here.
He rubbed the back of his neck and paged through the book again.
All this has are instructions for how to make things.
I peered over his shoulder to see what he meant,
Diagrams were scattered all over the pages, instructions on how to create weapons. I shuddered at the thought. But then I thought about the monster from last night. If we had to face anything like that again, weapons would be useful to have around. I wouldn't always have metal monkey bars at my disposal. Chris circled around Blake to get a look.
What kind of things?
He asked.
Weapons.
Blake lowered the book, his eyes hard.
It's full of instructions about how to forge weapons with fire.
Cool.
Chris frowned, not sounding as enthused as usual.
But why do we need weapons? We've got our powers.
He swirled some leaves around for emphasis.
I don't know.
Blake closed the book and picked up the other, smaller box. He opened it and pulled something out that looked like an antique pocket watch. 5 words were engraved on the top. They were written in Greek, but my mind automatically translated them. Fire, water, air, and earth. In the center was the Greek word for spirit, or ether. Blake popped it open, revealing a black needle with a scripted gold K on the tip. Along the edges of the circle were 4 evenly dispersed gems, a ruby, emerald, topaz, and sapphire. A diamond sparkled in the center, the needle balanced on top of it. It looks like a compass, I said. Danielle reached forward and grabbed it.
What does it mean by K? She asked.
Was there an explanation in the book? Kate asked Blake.
No, he said. It's only instructions on how to forge weapons. But feel free to look for yourself.
Kate opened the book and paged through it.
You're right, she finally said. There's no clue here. So I guess the obvious thing to do is follow the compass.
Most compasses point north, I thought out loud. But this one points northwest.
How do you know that?
Danielle asked.
I just do, I said. Ever since moving here, I can feel directions. But you're free to use the compass app on your phone to check for yourself.
She opened her app and calibrated the compass.
Fine, you're right, she admitted.
The needle on the compass we found is pointing northwest, not north. I was tempted to tell her that I told her so, but I held my tongue. Blake looked back and forth between the two of us.
I guess we're going northwest, he said.
With that, he grabbed the box and led the way out of the woods. Chapter 28. Due to my newfound sense of direction, the group insisted that I sit in the passenger seat and navigate. Even Danielle agreed. The compass continued to lead us northwest, so we kept driving up Odessa Road, so far that we passed Kinsley High. But after passing the school, something changed. It's moving, I told them, watching the arrow steadily rotate. It's pointing east now.
Towards the school?
Danielle leaned forward to see for herself.
All of this running around collecting clues, and it's leading us to school?
Not directly towards the school, I answered. A little more south. It changed after the intersection of Odessa and Beverly Street. There are woods just south of the school, right? Kate pulled into a side street and turned around.
Bosley Woods, she muttered. Great.
Is there something wrong with those woods? I asked.
No, she shook her head. They just give me the creeps.
Me too,
Chris piped up from the back.
They give off a weird vibe.
Creepy woods emitting weird vibes? Fantastic. It couldn't be worse than a cemetery. But Kate loved nature. If the woods made her jumpy, they had to be pretty bad. Kate turned into the school. Only a few cars were parked in front, but other than that, the normally bustling lot was empty.
We can park near the gym, she said. It's closest to the woods, and it should be empty since there isn't a game today.
She headed towards the gym, and for the first time since we'd gotten in the car, everyone was silent.
It'll be fine, guys.
Danielle tried to break the tension.
Yeah,
Chris said with more confidence.
We've already swam in freezing water, flown to the top of a 60-foot statue, and excavated a burned-down cottage. We can handle whatever's coming next. We're the elementals.
The elementals? I laughed and glanced back at him.
We need a team name, he said sheepishly, since we're going to be working together and all.
Danielle sat back in her seat.
It sounds like something from a comic book, she said. We're witches, not superheroes.
And you know this because you read comics?
I stifled laughter, since I couldn't picture that.
No.
She crossed her arms and stared out the window. It looked ridiculous, since she was squished in the middle seat between Chris and Blake. Chris smiled and nudged her with his shoulder.
Don't lie, he teased. You used to bring them to school and trade them with Matt in second grade.
Matt? I gasped. You mean the human Chris introduced me to at the party last week? The one who's dating Anne?
That's right, Chris said, still smiling. Before we were allowed to use our powers, there wasn't such a big difference between us and humans. Until 9th grade.
He paused, glancing at Danielle and Blake.
Or earlier, for those of us who broke the rules. And if I remember right, Danielle didn't just trade comic books with Matt. Didn't the two of you have a thing?
Blake smirked. I remember that, he said. Then your parents thought you were getting too close to a human and wouldn't let you go over his house to play anymore. He were devastated.
Danielle huffed and glared at Chris. My parents knew what they were talking about, she said. There was no reason for me to waste my time with a human. Besides, it was in 2nd grade. We were 7. It doesn't count.
Oh, it counts.
Chris nodded his head dramatically.
Nicole,
he continued facing me.
What's your consensus on this?
Does this really matter? Kate interrupted, parking and yanking the key out of the ignition. Let's just check out the woods, follow the compass, and do whatever we're supposed to do.
We all climbed out of the car, and I studied the woods for the first time. Bosley Woods made Clinton Woods look like a welcoming palace. Just looking at them made me step backwards in revulsion. A gray mist hovered above the ground, ready to suck in anyone who walked on it. And the air smelled damp, like there was a mold growing everywhere. The wind blew the tallest trees back and forth, and it sounded like the forest was groaning, warning people to keep out. Still, the creepiness was more than what the forest looked like, because staring at it made a bone-chilling cold wash through my body. My chest tightened the same way it had before the two-headed hound attacked Blake and me at the playground, like a warning to leave before it was too late. I looked down at the compass in my hands. The needle pointed straight towards the woods. I shook it a few times to see if it would change its mind, but it stayed locked in place. This is the right place, I said, wishing I could tell them otherwise.
Is it just me, or are the woods creepier than normal?
Chris asked, his teeth chattering. Kate shivered and rubbed her arms.
They seem evil, she agreed. If that makes any sense.
It makes just as much sense as anything else that's happened recently. Danielle squinted like she was trying to see past the fog, which wove between the bottoms of the tree trunks like it had a life of its own. Blake stared straight into the woods. If he was scared, I couldn't tell.
So are we doing this or what? He asked.
The color drained from Chris's face, and he shifted his weight from one foot to the other.
Who's leading the way?
He asked. Kate took a small step forward.
I guess I'll do it, she volunteered. Earth is my element, which means this clue is mine. Whatever it is that we need to find next should be calling to me, or however it worked for the three of you.
She turned to face me, standing straighter.
I'll need the compass, she said matter-of-factly, since it seems to be telling us where to go.
Right. I held the compass out to her, and it felt good to get rid of it. Maybe Kate was supposed to have been controlling the compass all along, and because I'd been holding it, it hadn't pointed us in the right direction. She took it from me, and the arrow stayed in place. So much for that theory.
Follow me.
She took a deep breath, straightened her shoulders, and walked confidently towards the woods. I hoped the bravery wasn't just for show. With Earth being her element, Kate should be comfortable in places like this. I walked through the opening to the woods, and a chill passed through my body. The forest held no traces of life.
Grass had grown here at some point, but all of it was dead, browned and wilted, pressed to the ground like it had been trampled in a stampede. I glanced over my shoulder to check on the others. Blake was only 2 feet behind me, having just stepped over the perimeter. He paused and met my gaze.
"Do you want me to go ahead of you?"
he asked. "I'm fine," I said, reminding myself that we were more powerful than any animal in these woods. We shouldn't have a problem protecting ourselves. "But thanks."
"No problem."
He looked to where Kate waited next to a tree so big that it must have been hundreds of years old.
"If anything tries to attack from behind, I've got your back. After all, I owe you."
I wondered if he was referring to when I saved him from hypothermia, helped him kill the monster last night, or both. But Kate was waiting for us, so I just said thanks, turned around, and jogged down the path to catch up with her. "Scared?" Kate asked, a wry smile on her lips. "A little." I looked up at the looming branches, arched like gnarled fingers, about to reach down and snatch me up. "Like you said, the woods are creepy."
"They're just trees," she said. "They're not going to come alive and attack us. Plus, I get the feeling that it's not the trees that are evil. It's something else. Something hidden in the woods."
I wrapped my arms around myself and shivered. "With our luck, the compass is pointing right to that something," I said.
"We won't know until we get there."
With that, Kate turned around and led us towards wherever the compass was telling us to go next. Chapter 29. We trekked deeper into the woods, the tight feeling in my chest growing worse with every step. The further we got, the more the temperature dropped. The cold penetrated my bones, and I could barely feel my fingers or toes anymore. "Are we almost there?" I asked Kate, stumbling on a twisted root. I caught myself and looked over my shoulder to see if anyone saw, my eyes instantly meeting Blake's. He smiled, and I turned around to continue walking, my cheeks heating from embarrassment.
"The path is getting wider," Kate called back. "Hopefully that's a good thing."
"Right," I muttered. The cold was growing worse with each step, and I brought the ends of my sleeves together and held my hands inside of them, trying to get some feeling back into my fingers. I really needed to remember my gloves. I wished I were inside in front of a fire, sipping on hot chocolate like any normal person would be doing in the winter.
"I think this is it," Kate said from ahead.
I hurried to join her in a circular clearing. Just like the rest of the forest, the grass was dead and pressed to the ground. But the break in the trees allowed the sun to shine through, and I looked up, smiling as the warmth caressed my cheeks.
"What is this place?"
Blake asked from beside me. He shivered and brought out his lighter, flicking it on to form a hovering ball of fire. I took my hands out of my sleeves and held them over the light. My fingertips stung as the warmth returned to them. "Thanks," I said, pushing the pads of my fingers together to check if I could feel them. I could. "But you shouldn't use up too much energy. Whatever we have to do next, well, I don't know what it will be, but I have a feeling that we're going to need to save up as much energy for it as we can." Danielle joined us, also warming her hands up above the flame. "Nicole's right," she said. "You shouldn't use up too much energy." Blake moved his hands to his sides, and the fire disappeared. The change of light made my vision spotty. I blinked a few times until it was back to normal and turned my focus back to Kate. She was staring down at the compass with wide eyes, her jaw dropped open. "What is it?" I rushed to her side and looked at the compass, gasping at what I saw. The needle spun around so quickly that it blended into the gold background, looking like it could break or fly right off at any second. Kate snapped the compass shut, looked at each of us, and said,
"I guess we've reached our destination."
Chapter 30. "What now?" I asked, looking around the clearing again. It wasn't a circle like I'd originally thought. It was more of a semicircle, curving around two huge trees.
"I'm going to ask the trees what we need to do," Kate resolved, marching over to the largest one.
Did you just say, ask the trees?
Danielle laughed, her upper lip curled in disbelief. Kate placed a hand on the side of the tree, not bothering to answer Danielle's question.
Yep,
Chris nodded, his lips pressed together.
She's asking the trees.
What else do you do when you're in the middle of a forest with a crazy compass and no clue what to do next?
Kate held her hand against the trunk, her eyes closed. She stood like that for about half a minute, then she lifted her hand off the tree. The ground grumbled, so loud that it could have been Hades trying to escape from the underworld. Then the tree roots shifted. They moved farther apart, revealing a boulder behind them. The branches reshaped, creaking as they twisted up and around each other, meeting at the top to form a huge archway.
The trees just moved.
Chris drew back, his face pale.
They moved. Like, they're alive.
Trees are alive, Danielle said slowly. But yeah, they moved. And trees don't do that.
These trees do. I glanced at her and then back at where Kate stood, mesmerized, in front of the boulder.
It looks like a door,
Blake said, taking a step forward.
I would say we should go through it, but we can't walk through rock.
True. I turned my attention back to Kate. What did you mean that you were talking to the trees?
I touched them, and I could communicate with them.
She shrugged.
In my head, of course. I can do that with all plants.
She nodded, like that explained everything, and turned to Blake.
You're right. It's a door. We're supposed to walk through it.
But it leads to a rock,
he said again.
The door doesn't go anywhere.
Or it doesn't look like it goes anywhere.
Danielle laughed.
So we're supposed to walk through the boulder? She asked. And it's supposed to take us where? To a secret platform so we can board a magical train?
I almost laughed as well, but then I saw Kate bite her lip like she was about to cry, and I stopped myself.
If we go in there, we'll be able to get out, right?
Chris asked.
We won't get stuck on the other side.
There's only one way to know, Kate said. Let's test it out.
Before any of us could stop her, she stepped into the rock, disappearing completely. Ripples spread across the granite, like when a stone is dropped into a pond. I stared at the rock in disbelief.
Where did she go? I asked. Is she gone?
I don't know,
Chris said.
Should one of us go in after her?
We all continued staring at the boulder. No one volunteered.
I can go.
Blake stepped up, his face hard with determination.
No.
Danielle grabbed his hand, as if that would be enough to stop him.
Don't try to pull that again. Earth is Kate's element. She knows what she's doing.
If you go after her, you might hurt yourself. Again.
That's a risk we'll have to take.
He pulled his hand out of hers and crossed his arms.
We can't just stand here doing nothing.
I should be the one to do it, I said, wishing I could sound half as brave as Blake. If Kate's hurt, I can heal her.
You could.
Danielle stared at me, her finger on her chin, as if she was sizing me up.
You can't go alone.
Blake locked his gaze with mine.
We'll both go.
I stepped closer to him, trying to swallow down the panic surging through my veins.
Don't worry,
he murmured, placing his hands on my shoulders.
I won't let anything bad happen to you. I promise.
I nodded and took a deep breath. Blake would keep me safe. I had to trust him. But what if whatever was waiting on the other side of that rock was too dangerous for either of us to handle? Before I could think about it too much, Kate stepped back out, a huge smile on her face.
See? She said, brushing a twig out of her hair. The trees don't lie.
Thank God you're okay, I exclaimed, running up to her and giving her a huge hug. We had no idea where you'd gone. We were about to go in after you.
I'm fine, she said with a small laugh. Really, it's no big deal.
She did seem to be okay. Then I realized that I was about 2 feet away from the boulder, and I took a few steps back.
The boulder probably couldn't suck us in, but it didn't hurt to be careful.
I guess this means that if we go in, we can get back out, Blake said, joining Kate next to the boulder. Good to know.
But where does it lead? Chris asked.
I couldn't tell, Kate shrugged. It was pitch black in there, but it smelled musty, like the earth. Blake can use his firepower to light the way, but this is where we have to go next. I know it. So, are you all coming, or what?
I stepped forward at the same time as Danielle. Kate made room for me between her and Blake, and Danielle stood on the other side of him. My fingers brushed against Blake's when I squeezed into my spot. The contact caused a wave of heat to course through my body, but I stuffed my hand into the front pocket of my jacket, not wanting to let Blake distract me from what we were about to do. Chris trudged forward to stand next to Kate.
I'm guessing I'm coming too.
He gave in, surveying the arching branches.
Follow me.
Kate squared her shoulders and reached her arm out, her hand sinking into the granite like it was no denser than the air. Then she closed her eyes and walked into the boulder, vanishing inside of it once again.
I'm next.
Blake walked into the rock like it was something he did every day, disappearing from sight. I stepped forward, but Danielle's elbow pushed against my chest, blocking my way.
I'm going after Blake.
She flung her hair over her shoulder so it hit my face and stepped through the boulder. Chris was the only other one of us left. He shoved his hands into his pockets and shifted from one foot to the other.
After you,
he said, motioning for me to go first. The sparkling granite was inches from my face, and I clenched my fists to my sides, unsure if I could do it. I trusted that Kate was telling us the truth that it was safe, but she didn't know the details of how this portal, or whatever it was, worked. What if she was the only one supposed to go through, and it shredded the rest of us into bits? Or what if we all got through in one piece, but ended up in different places? But as terrified as I was, I also didn't want to be left alone in these woods. So I pushed the worry from my mind and closed my eyes, trying to relax. It would be easier to walk through solid granite if I didn't have to watch it approach. Then I took a deep breath and stepped into the rock. Chapter 31. Walking through the boulder reminded me of one of those mist machines at theme parks, cold and prickly against my skin. The whooshing of the wind through the trees instantly disappeared. All I could hear now was the steady dripping of water echoing from the distance. Damp, musty air filled my nose, and the humidity layered on my skin. It was like I was in a windowless basement with a leaky pipe that hadn't been tended to in years. Finally, I opened my eyes. Kate, Blake, and Danielle stared back at me, and relief rushed through my veins at the sight of them. Wherever we were was dark. The balls of fire in Blake's hands were the only light we had. Jagged, patchy shadows stretched across the ground, and I looked up to see what would cause shapes like that. Huge stalactites dropped down from above, like they were defending the area against unwanted visitors. I was no geologist, but even though the ceiling was too high up to see in the darkness, there was no mistaking what this was. We were in a cavern. Air whooshed behind me, and Chris stepped through a shimmering wall. He stumbled forward and steadied himself.
That was easier than I thought,
he said, blinking a few times and looking around. His voice echoed when he spoke, making him sound louder than normal.
We're in a cave. Cool.
A huge cave, I added, still trying to figure out how big it was. Blake's fire didn't come close to filling it up, making it impossible to tell. Danielle turned on her heel to look at Kate.
Do you know where the clue is? She asked.
No. Kate shook her head. And the compass is useless. The arrow just keeps spinning around.
So let's explore,
Blake said, the flames in his hands growing taller. Without waiting for a reply, he turned and walked forward.
Wait.
Danielle held her hands up, stopping us. We need to remember how to get back here.
As far as we know, this door is our only way out, and we need to be able to find it. Does anyone have something we can use to mark our path?
Like how Hansel and Gretel used breadcrumbs so they didn't get lost in the woods? Kate asked.
Yes, she said. Exactly like that.
I'll remember how to get back, I told her.
But if your perfect sense of direction fails, or if we need to split up, we'll need a backup plan, Danielle said, lifting her chin defiantly in the air.
Fine. I held my hands out in defeat. I doubted my new directional sense would suddenly stop working, and splitting up was rarely a good idea, but it wasn't worth arguing with Danielle. She nodded, her expression serious.
Now, like I asked before, does anyone have anything to mark the path with?
The prophecy only took up a small part of the paper, I said, removing the crumpled sheet from my back pocket. This is only a copy, so I can tear off the part with the writing on it and rip the rest to mark our path.
Good idea, Blake said. Chris, you stay in the back and drop pieces of paper behind you every 10 feet or so. Make sure they're small. We don't want to run out.
Sure thing, Chris said,
although the frown on his face gave me the feeling that he wasn't happy about being stuck in the back. I tore off the part of the page that held the prophecy and handed the rest of the paper to Chris. The part with writing on it was so narrow that it looked like it could have come out of a giant fortune cookie. I folded it up and put it back into my pocket, taking a deep breath in preparation to explore the darkness ahead. We only made it 20 feet, and then Blake stopped in his path, holding his arms out to keep us from going any further.
Chapter 32. Ahead of us, the ground came to a startling halt, dropping into the darkness with no end in sight.
Don't get any closer,
Blake said, throwing a ball of fire downward. It fell about 100 feet, hit the ground, and sizzled out. I spotted what looked like a tunnel at the bottom, and then the light disappeared completely.
Great,
I mumbled, kicking a pebble over the edge. It clattered when it reached the ground. My head spun, and I took a step back so I wouldn't have to look anymore. We walk for less than a minute and reach a cliff.
Should we try going another way? Chris asked.
No.
Blake threw another ball of fire, lighting up the bottom once more. Again, it went out after a few seconds.
I can't keep the fire going from this far away, but there's a tunnel down there, he said. We need to figure out how to get to it.
No problem.
Chris pushed up the sleeves of his jacket and looked down the cliff.
Seriously? Kate said. You're going to float us all down? Do you have enough energy left to do that?
Easily.
He rubbed his hands together, smiling and looking around at all of us.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go, Kate volunteered. I already know what to do, since you flew me up to try getting the eagle. Not like you have to do anything, she assured us. But at least I'm prepared.
But what are we going to do about light? Danielle asked.
Blake can't be in two places at once, and Chris needs to be able to see the person he's lowering down.
She's right, Chris nodded. If I can't see someone, I'll drop them.
Can you hold two people at once?
Blake asked him.
Probably,
Chris said slowly.
As long as they stay close together.
How about this?
Blake said, glancing down the cliff.
I'll go down with one person and hold on to them to light the way. Then you bring me back up and we'll continue like that until everyone is down.
I think I can manage that.
Chris looked down the cliff again and then glanced at Kate.
You still up for going first?
Are you sure about this?
She didn't sound as confident as she did a few minutes ago. I couldn't blame her since Chris didn't sound positive that he could pull it off. Why don't I go first? I volunteered. The words shocked me the moment I spoke them. But as much as I hated heights, I might as well get this over with. That way, I wouldn't have to stand up here freaking out for longer than necessary. I'm the one with the healing ability, so if anyone falls and gets hurt, I can fix them.
After how much you've already used your power today?
Blake shook his head.
Are you sure you can handle it?
I'll be fine, I said, even though he was right that I'd used my power a lot today. I didn't feel like I was about to pass out on the spot, but I did feel more tired than normal. Hopefully everyone would get down in one piece, and it wouldn't be an issue. I glanced down the cliff again, my body shaking at the reminder of the height. A wave of dizziness overtook me, and I stepped back. Are you ready? I asked Chris, somehow managing to sound more confident than I felt. Chris nodded.
Go stand next to Blake.
He looked over at Blake, who was next to the ledge.
Don't drop her, or we won't have our healer.
Don't worry, Blake said, looking at me.
I won't drop you.
He held a hand out, focusing on me like he was trying to will me to believe him. I know you won't, I said, taking his hand. His palm radiated warmth, most likely from the fire he'd held in it seconds before. He still held a ball of fire in his other hand. It glowed bright against his skin. My hands wouldn't stop shaking, and I tightened my grip around his to calm down. I trust you. He wrapped his arm around me, pulling me closer until my cheek rested against his chest. The warmth felt nice compared to the freezing cold we dealt with for the majority of the day. I held on to him tightly and took a deep breath. He smelled good, like a campfire on a summer night. He wasn't going to let me fall, and neither was Chris.
Get ready.
Chris's voice rang loudly in the cave.
I'm starting now.
The air swirled around me, pushing up against my feet. The ground floated away until Blake and I hovered inches away from the cliff. While I technically wasn't standing on anything, it felt like there was something beneath my feet, like the air had condensed so it could hold us, although it wasn't solid either. It was like walking on a cloud. The make-believe cloud moved to the side, bringing the two of us with it. Suddenly, we were past the ledge, and the ground disappeared from under our feet. My pulse quickened. If Chris dropped us now, that would be it. I squeezed my eyes shut, pressing my cheek against Blake's chest and listening to the steady beat of his heart. It kept my mind off the fact that I was floating down a 100-foot drop and could fall at any moment if Chris lost his concentration or sight of us. My heart sped up at the thought, and my lungs squeezed together, suffocating me until all I could manage were short, shallow breaths. Blake's arm tightened around my waist, holding me closer.
Are you okay?
He whispered, soft enough so no one else could hear. I'm fine, I lied. Are we almost there?
Just a few feet more.
The warmth of the nearby fire let me know that I wasn't totally surrounded by darkness, which allowed me to breathe easier. Of course we were going to be fine. Chris wouldn't let us fall. After what felt like forever, my feet finally touched the ground. Once sure I was steady, I willed myself to open my eyes. A rock wall greeted me. I looked up, unable to make out the shapes of the others at the top of the cliff.
Are you guys all right?
Chris called down.
We're good,
Blake answered, his arms still tight around my waist. Neither of us made an effort to move away from one another.
You did a great job,
he said, soft enough that only I could hear. Then, everything went dark. It was pitch black. And not like when it's nighttime and the stars and moon are shining overhead so you can still tell where you are. It was like I'd gone blind. I held my hand in front of my face to test if I could see it, but it made no difference. The entire world had disappeared.
What's going on down there?
Chris screamed from up in the darkness.
The fire went out, and I dropped my lighter, Blake said. Hold on while I find it.
Is everything okay? I asked, quieter, so only he could hear. Are you tired from using your power so much today? If you need a break, I'm sure everyone would wait.
I'm fine,
he said.
Although it's sweet that you're so worried.
Okay. I struggled to see, but it was impossible. All I could focus on was the pressure of Blake's arm still wrapped tightly around my waist, and that we were standing so close that I could feel his breath on my cheek. He moved to face me, his nose brushing mine.
Do you want to know a secret?
He asked. What secret? I asked, my voice barely louder than a whisper.
The fire didn't go out by accident.
Then he pressed his lips to mine, and the world disappeared around me. He traced his fingers up my arm, and before I knew what was happening,
He'd pinned me against the wall of the cliff, his fingers entangled deep into my hair. My hand found its way to his, our palms connecting. A wave of energy passed through my body as the bond between us twisted together, reminding me of what I'd felt earlier while healing him. We shouldn't be doing this, but I didn't care. All that mattered was Blake kissing me, and how I never wanted him to stop.
What's taking so long down there?
Chris's voice jolted me back into reality. The reality where Danielle was standing 100 feet above, blinded to how her boyfriend was cheating on her under her nose. Guilt flooded my chest, and I pulled away from Blake, glad that it was too dark for us to see each other. Otherwise, he would see the hold he had over me, and it would make it harder for me to do what was right.
I dropped the lighter and had to find it, Blake called back. I got it now.
Good,
Danielle said, and at the sound of her voice, I took another step away from Blake. If I didn't, I was afraid I would reach for him again, and I couldn't allow that to happen.
Can you put it back on? She asked. It's pitch dark in here.
Yeah, Blake said. Just a moment.
His hand brushed mine, but I pulled away, running my fingers through my hair to smooth it. My stomach twisted with the knowledge of what I'd let happen. Contributing to cheating was unlike me. Then again, I wasn't the same person I was back in Georgia. Now I knew that the blood of ancient gods runs through my veins, and that I have powers most people don't believe exist. But I wouldn't let that change my morals. Because despite what Blake had told me about wanting to end his relationship with Danielle, he hadn't done it yet. Until he did, nothing could happen between us.
Nicole, he whispered. Are you okay?
That never should have happened, I said. It can't happen again.
You don't mean that.
Yes. I swallowed away tears. I do. Now, go get the others. They're waiting. He was silent for a few seconds, as if expecting me to take it back. But I didn't. So he flicked the lighter back on, and despite being able to see again, I refused to meet his gaze. Because if I did, I might lose it completely.
Chapter 33. It didn't take Chris long to lower Kate, Danielle, and himself down the cliff. I couldn't look at Blake again, for fear that one of the others would see the way I was looking at him and realize that something had happened between us in the darkness. It was the hardest when he brought down Danielle, his arms wrapped tightly around her the same way they'd been around me. Because despite what he'd told me about wanting to break up with her, they had history together. They'd known each other for years. How was I supposed to compete with that? Not wanting to focus on them for fear of tearing up again, I looked around to get an idea of my surroundings. The cavern looked even bigger from the bottom of the cliff than from the top. The walls sloped up into a dome, the stalagmites and stalactites growing longer down here than the ones on the top of the cliff. Some of them were so old that they now met together to form giant columns.
Let's keep going, Blake said, turning around to continue forward.
We reached the end of the room and arrived at the tunnel we'd seen from the top of the cliff. It was about 10 feet tall, like a gaping mouth, and like the rest of the cavern, it was so dark that I couldn't see where it led. A warm breeze blew from inside of it, pushing a few strands of my hair out of place. It was like the place was alive, and while I didn't know what was waiting at the end, I had a terrible feeling about it.
We're really supposed to go in there? I asked.
What if it collapses on us?
I have power over the earth, Kate said. I won't let that happen.
I nodded and tried to swallow down my worry. We couldn't turn back now, and Kate was right. We all had powers over the elements, and we wouldn't let anything happen to each other. I had to trust my friends.
I'll go first and light the way,
Blake said, taking a few steps closer to the opening, the fire glowing brightly in his hands. I hurried to follow him, but Danielle had the same idea, and I nearly crashed into her. She glared at me and scurried ahead so she was directly behind Blake. Kate walked behind me, and Chris trailed in the back.
He diligently dropped a piece of paper every so often to mark our path. Blake's light didn't extend far enough to show us an end anywhere in sight. We continued forward, the air thickening with humidity. Beads of sweat accumulated along my brow, and I unzipped my coat, which was a welcome change from the freezing weather we'd had outside. A faint bubbling echoed in the distance, like water in a pot when it starts to boil. Finally, the tunnel came to an end and dumped us into another large chamber. The fire in Blake's hand grew bigger.
"We have another problem," he said,
his voice steady as he looked straight ahead. The ground ended, but this time it didn't stop at a cliff. It met with a